Welcome to This Day in Pottery History, a series of brief observations, meditations, vignettes, and editorials about the back roads and byways of pottery history that helped shape the pottery world as we know it today, here on this very day in pottery history. I'm your host, Stephen Earp. For images and reading lists associated with these narratives, visit StephenEarp.com/podcasts. And now, let's get going. Episode 4, Rock Will Cover It. It wasn't as if some governmental agency had written a position paper on post-Revolutionary War cultural development, although many individuals did. Many of our founding fathers believed the arts would flourish once we were freed from the yoke of English tyranny. The population was thus urged, for example, to favor fancy over purely utilitarian goods. Fancy in this context meant an intelligent stimulus towards creative thinking. But there's a funny thing about mercantile capitalism. Phrases like fancy goods are quickly co-opted by bald-faced mass marketing campaigns. The disappointment of such people as Charles Wilson Peel and Noah Webster was visceral when events turned out differently than expected. There was probably no clearer nor more ironic example of this situation than the trajectory of the Rockingham glaze. Rockingham originally described a rich chocolate brown colored glaze made on the Marquis of Rockingham's Swinton estate in Yorkshire, England, beginning around 1757. And I mean rich. If you've ever seen an example of this glaze in person, you'd swear it looks so much like milk chocolate, you could eat it. When the Swinton pottery failed in 1842, the glaze went, quite successfully, to potteries in Derbyshire. It also went with hordes of emigrating potters to the United States. American potters, mostly English emigres freed from the conventions of their homeland, lost no time in transforming Rockingham into a dripped, splattered, sponged polychrome marvel. Pottery from Bennington, Vermont to East Liverpool, Ohio was slathered with it. Within 3 years of its introduction to these shores, Rockingham by James Bennett of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, won the 1845 Franklin Institute Pottery Diploma, that is, first prize. Trenton, New Jersey was an epicenter of top-notch production, with emigre Daniel Greatback as perhaps Rockingham's best practitioner. Christopher Weber Fenton hoped to mimic Josiah Wedgwood's nomenclature genius by calling the Rockingham he made at the Norton Pottery in Bennington, Vermont, flint enamel. Local potters called Fenton's nomenclature humbug. Others called Rockingham variegated ware, fancy ware, or simply rock. Today, a discerning eye looking at Rockingham's finest examples becomes lost in the depths of flowing, layered colors. At the risk of hyperbole, another common 19th century trait, one could almost see it as a genuine American Tang glazing style. The best and, I believe, largest collection of this work is at the Bennington Museum of Art. But if you visit the museum, you have to be discerning as to what to look at and for how long. This is because most of the tonnage of 19th century Rockingham was quite gaudy. And therein lay Rockingham's downside. The glaze's overpowering nature could make anything look fancy. So much so that in 1901, years after Rockingham's craze had run its course, James Carr sighed while recounting what might have been a common exchange between pottery owner and shop worker. Roughness was the order of the day, and if I made a complaint, the answer was, "Well, boss, rock will cover it." Thanks for listening, and until next time, remember the words of that anonymous and quite humble 17th century potter. No craft can with our art compare. We make our pots from what we potters are.